Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. This is our Q&A series where I answer your questions regarding the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker. Let's get started.
Frank sends an email. The phrase I'm trying to get more of an understanding of is the policy owner has more of an effect on the policy than anyone or anything else. Could you elaborate on that statement more? My idea of an effective use of a policy is use through policy loans and being capitalized enough to take advantage of opportunities. Is that within the range of reason you're alluding to at times? Well, there's two different things. I think that your idea is, I agree with your idea, being properly capitalized to take advantage of opportunities. Now, just let that stand alone. Being properly capitalized to take advantage of opportunities. Who doesn't want to do that? Who shouldn't want to do that? So I completely agree. Yes, you should do that. Everyone should do that. Be properly capitalized, period. If you are, then you can take advantage of opportunity. You can also vet opportunities. Everything walking down the street presenting itself as an opportunity is not an opportunity. Okay. So yes, you should be properly capitalized to take advantage of what you determine to be an opportunity. Yes. Now that separate. And Nelson used to say it where I got it. I'm nothing original here. I can't really say that. I have a lot of original things here. But I do give credit where credit is due. So Nelson used to say that the policy owner has a greater bearing on the outcome of a policy than even the life insurance company. So there's only three people in this agreement. The life insurance company issued the contract. The owner who owns it, maybe the insured and the payer, they could be four people, right? But there's three primary entities, the insurance company, the owner, and the insured, right? And the owner can be the same as the insured, right? So this trumps everybody else. So anything or anything else, anybody or anything else, yes. What does that mean? Okay, well, here's what that means is if you have the ability to pay a premium or not pay a premium, if you have an ability to repay a loan sooner than later, that is what affects the outcome. When the policy is built, it's did you pay as much premium as that policy allowed, and did you repay those loans in a timely fashion? It's your actions, and it gets down to exactly that, premium and loan repayments. I say all the time, premium, the problem is a problem. Premium is the solution. It may sound trite. It's absolutely true. Whatever your problem is, and I'm not, you know, talking about health issues necessarily, or whatever the problem is, it is, right? You work too hard. You work too long. You don't get enough. You don't get paid enough. You're undercapitalized. You know, the third-party lenders are breathing down your neck. Your partners are scoundrels, whatever. The premium is the solution. Why? Because that is building capital that you have control of, right? Okay, I hope that answers your question, and thank you for it. Okay, this question. I have been practicing the infinite banking concept for some time. I have been to the NNI website, the Nelson Nash Institute website, several times and have seen you listed as a board member. However, the last time I went, you were not listed. Is there a reason why? And then he goes on, I appreciate all you do. Your podcast is one of the best out there concerning infinite banking. Keep up the good work. Thank you for your kind words, sir. And, you know, I have been asked this question several times lately through emails and phone conversations. And first, let me be clear that it is a council, not a board. So I was, yes, listed as a council member. The council was created last year in 2023 and was supposed to advise the board. So I decided to leave the council in April of this year, 2024. And I'll go into the reasons in which I made the decision to leave at a future date and time. And I really don't mean to be cryptic, but I decided to leave the council, and that is why I am no longer listed as a council member. And thank you for the question, sir. These are pretty specific questions. It would take a broader work than a Q&A. But one of them is, are there fee tables in the insurance contract or something similar to fee tables in the traditional financial world? Then the sub question is, are the insurance fee tables, other fees or commissions better, worse, or comparable to traditional finance? Well, traditional finance is pretty broad, you know, banks, the investment world, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, you know, portfolios, real estate portfolios, whatever they may be. There are fees associated with everything that you do in the financial world. There's a fee associated with it or a cost associated with it. And whether the agent or advisor gets paid commissions or fees, there's always a revenue share. Everybody's in the financial world to number one, deliver service to their clients, and number two, to be profitable, right? We're all capitalists here. Okay. And so this is a very gray area in the old argument within the industry. Everybody tries to beat each other up. You know, the stockbroker says, you're going to pay all those big commissions to the agent. Commissions are a bad word. And now the whole construct today in the financial world is, assets under management, they get paid to accumulate. How do they get paid? They get paid fees. Well, we can all cherry pick timelines, right? If I have $1 million in a portfolio and I pay 1% and I own that portfolio or some value of that portfolio for 30 years, what is 1% of $1 million over 30 years? You compare that to the commissions of a life insurance policy over 30 years, you paid much more in fees to the investment guru in my example, right? But now I'm cherry picking timelines. I'm going 30 years. Okay. Well, the infinite banking concept is a long-term idea, a long-term endeavor. Well, so is an investment, right? Unless you're just going to make an investment in 1 year and liquidate it and sell it, which it has its own cost, right? And if you do that, if that's your strategy, you're going to do that over and over and over and over and over as long as you're active, right? Maybe that activity transpires over 30 years. You're going to pay a lot of fees, right? All of the fees in the investment world are disclosed in the prospectus. You get it, used to get it in the mail every year and you throw it away because you didn't want to go through it. You didn't want to open up your account statements when the market was down because you didn't want to see how much you lost. Now you get it digitally probably, unless you opted out, right? So the digital prospectus that discloses all the fees of any investment product, an investment product where the consumer has the ability to lose money, right? Not, there's no guarantees in there, right? Okay, well, you can't go to one page in that prospectus and find all the fees. Go figure. Written by attorneys. Not really written for the layman to read. It just is what it is, right? But you total up all the fees in that, but they're all disclosed in the prospectus is my point. All of the fees or commissions, not the commissions, but the costs are disclosed in a life insurance contract. Because that's exactly what a policy is a contract, right? And then the commissions are all across the board. This company pays this amount. This company pays that amount. Even on the internet, in the infinite banking footprint, these hucksters and yahoos say, I structure policies this way. And if anybody structures them any other way, they're doing it for commissions. That is such hogwash. That is so low level for the non-thinker. Right. It sounds good, James, and they're saying it with authority and they have a ill-fitting suit on with a tie. You know, I heard a haberdasher one time in a clothier. I know I don't want to date myself, an English guy, and he's showing on YouTube or TikTok how to tie a tie. Right. And I say this on purpose. English gentleman, well-dressed, a clothier at a fine shop in London, you know, on that street where all the clothiers coagulate. And he shows a man how to tie a tie, and then he shows him how to, you know, pull it up to his collar. And then he gives the example of how most young men or an awful lot of people don't pull it all the way up. And he says, then you'll look like a drunk sailor. Don't look like a drunk sailor. Okay. and I'm not even trying to disparage the individuals that I'm referring to with their ill-fitting suits and their drunken sailor-like ties, but that's my reference, right? Just because they get paid a certain amount and they bill policies a certain way, and if anybody does something different, they say they're doing it for commissions, I'm telling you, it's hogwash. All of the life insurance companies pay relatively the same amount of commissions. They just don't pay it to this guy, okay? They don't pay it to him. They pay it to him and everybody above him, and all of that's based on a lot of factors within the life insurance industry. Total amount of production, persistency. There's so many things in there that just makes that blanket statement, although it sounds good and it's compelling if you hate the word commission, oh, we'll change the word. Revenue share, pay, W-2, distribution, right? All of those are cash flows and income to somebody, right? So I don't personally believe commissions are a bad word. And I get paid commissions with life insurance company products, and I get paid fees through investment products. And at the end of the day, you, the consumer, paid for everything, whether you can clearly see the fees, and I'm telling you, if there are fees associated, they're disclosed in the prospectus on an investment, in the policy contract, if it's a life insurance policy, or an annuity contract, which is another contract issued by life insurance companies. Those fees are disclosed in there. What you cannot do, and what just ticks so many people, especially the termites, the people who promote term, and the people who hate life insurance, you cannot unbundle whole life insurance. You can't do it. It can't be done. Well, if we unbundled that, then we'd get clarity on what kind of commissions are being paid. Well, if that's where you live, God bless you. You can't unbundle a whole life insurance policy. The life insurance company tried to do it, right, at the behest of, you know, the do-gooders like, you know, the people that promote, Ralph Nader and his ilk, you know, consumer protection advocates. It's like life insurance is unclear, it's confusing, and the average individual is dumb. They can't understand it. It should be insulting. It's insulting to me as a consumer. So you need to unbundle this whole life insurance so that people can clearly understand what's going on. Well, the life insurance industry tried to do that, and they came up with universal life in the 80s. Right? Yeah, and hired Michael Milken, the junk bond king, to advise them. Think through that. And then you have universal life. Then, you know, I can go on and on about that. But I hope that answered your question, and I hope my little rant there was somewhat entertaining. And thanks for the question, okay? The decision to do anything financially should go well beyond a particular point. What the provider is, the agent, the advisor, the broker dealer, the investment advisory firm, the insurance agent, the insurance, they're all going to be profitable. Every one of them. They're all going to be profitable, or they're going to be out of business. So if you want to work with somebody and make sure that they earn the very least amount possible, then God bless you. Right. Who are you going to call when you need something? Well, I don't need anyone. Okay. Maybe you don't. They're going to go out of business if they can't make a profit. So you're not going to call them, whoever they are. Right. So the decision to do something financially should be much broader than what somebody's getting paid, in my humble opinion. Does that mean you want to overpay anyone? No, of course not. But don't live or die on a single point, even if that point is fees and commissions. Now, are you saying, James, I want to go buy a mutual fund where I can get a no load or low load up front compared to upfront load? Well, that's only one fee. They have the 12B1 fees. They have the management fees. They have the trading fees. They have the account fees. There's all kinds of fees, right? So do your due diligence, total them all up with all of the other characteristics of whatever financial product you're buying or considering. Okay, thank you. It is really a statement email. I would love to see some practical examples of how to keep track of all of your loans and payback schedules. It's easy for me to get overwhelmed by how many loans I've taken and how to best plan their payback. I get it. Create you an Excel spreadsheet. You know, if I was paying, you know, if I borrowed $30,000 from a third party lender and they required a, I don't know, a $500 a month loan repayment, right? And then I have the ability to collateralize the policy, borrow the money from the life insurance company, pay that $30,000 loan off. Shouldn't that cash flow that was going to the third party, shouldn't that at a bare minimum be the loan repayment to the life insurance company? Yes. Oh, and if you're going to do multiple loans, perfect. You do need some way to keep track of that. No question. And my encouragement is an Excel spreadsheet. Because a life insurance company, you could borrow $30,000 today if you have the ability, and $30,000, you know, 6 months from now, you're paying down that one loan in your mind. And then you borrow a second loan, $30,000, you start paying that down on a completely different amortization table. Maybe the loan interest rate has changed with the life insurance company. They don't care what you do with the money. They don't look at, oh, there's one $30,000 loan. Here's another. No, it's all one outstanding loan. The life insurance company is not going to do the accounting for you. So you should do your own accounting. All right. Okay. I would like to have a little more explanation of the best ways to create a family bank and leave a legacy for generations to come. What are some good rules and principles for the family use to qualify for a loan from the family bank, and how to best keep track? Also, should a trust be involved in order to really establish a lasting legacy with family policies? What should the yearly family meetings look like? Listen, man, you're the banker. The banker gets to do whatever they want. You get to set your own rules. You get to, and if you're the matriarch or the patriarch of your family, you get to establish those rules, you know, and then if you're going to be graceful and allow input from your family members to modify the rules that you set out in the beginning, God bless you. Do that. You design that, right? I know there are people across the country that have family, meetings and have family, you know, we have clients that have 3 and 4 generations insured. So, and that does tie into your first question. You should develop an Excel spreadsheet. How do you keep track of those? Everybody should be responsible, right? If they've got a loan, that requires loan repayments. And I've seen it across the board. I have some clients, they require their family members to read Nelson's work, Becoming Your Own Banker, Building a Warehouse of Wealth, and a couple of other works that are not, you know, marketing material out in the big wide world, but are substantial first works material. And if they don't embrace it and understand it, then they're excluded from the family bank. You know, should a trust, I'm not giving legal advice whatsoever, but a life insurance policy dies with the insured. Those proceeds are going to be paid tax-free generally to the beneficiary. Can a trust be a beneficiary? Yes, they can. Can a trust have contingent and successor and co trustees? Yes, they can. So should a trust be part of a lasting legacy of a family? And I would, without answering your question, giving legal advice, my question would be, why not? All right, should it be done? If it is done, it should be done correctly with an attorney. Don't go buy a trust off the internet. You know, if you live in Texas, Texas almost has its own language in the law. If you live in California, you know, whatever state you're in, meet with, understand, know an attorney, right, that you're going to engage with. Vet them, just like you're vetting the life insurance and everything else you vet. This is very important, right, if we're talking about multiple generations, right? So my encouragement is for you to educate yourself, and then you do what you think is best for you, and then adjust accordingly. Right. The best ways to prepare to take massive income later in life from policy loans, and how to calculate potential expectations. I would say, how do you best prepare to take passive income later in life is be healthy, live a long time. Right. And then if you have life insurance policies, your agent, advisor, or the life insurance company itself can produce for you illustrations, income illustrations, right? And the parameters are on that is, how much income can I take, you know, at a certain age? And then you're going to pick a life expectancy for you and what have you. And they'll tell you, based on, you know, the current dividend scale and the current cash values, it'll produce X number of dollars in income, whether that's through loans or withdrawals, or loans to withdrawals, right? And I've talked a lot about these things in the client-only event. And if you're a client, you have access to that, or you have the opportunity to at least listen, And they're very good questions. In this question, here are some questions and these questions, and please don't feel like you have to answer all or any of them. Well, thank you for the grace, James. Number one, should you have paid off all of your policy loans before you start a new policy? Please provide some boundaries and or rules of thumb in this area. So the answer is should. That's, you know, kind of subjective. You know, it depends on you, what you're doing, your abilities, your income. You know, so for me and my personal situation, I have loans all the time, loan repayments all the time, and I'm continually buying life insurance. I'm not doing anything without, I mean, I'm expanding myself. I have expanded myself in my thinking from the day I met Nelson 20 years ago, right? So I'm paying more premium than I ever thought I would pay. I have more outstanding loans than I ever thought I would have. And my wife is paying loan repayments she never expected to pay. You know, so I don't personally wait, but I don't do anything, you know, beyond the stretch. You know, you can stretch something so far and then it breaks, right? Don't go up to that. Don't get to the breaking point, right? But stretch your mind, stretch what you're doing. The future is unknown and it's probably pretty good, okay? Two, I have, I have some cash value at this point that I could collateralize on some small things, but the things that I'm passionate about are much more expensive. If I tie up my cash value now, it'll just take that much longer to get the things I actually care about. Do you have any thoughts on how to extend the capitalization period without falling off the planned path? Yeah, the banker gets to do whatever they want. You know, if they're legitimate and you can benefit from, you know, financing smaller things on your way to building the cash value through premium and loan repayments to finance the larger things, then you do them. You know, it's your path. You make your own adjustments as you go. But if I want to buy a $500,000 piece of real estate, but I have the opportunity to, you know, finance three $50,000 cars before then, I can go finance those three $50,000 cars and then change the amortization or the loan repayment schedule as I get closer, or change it to the point where I can still make that $500,000 purchase in my example of the real estate at that point in time in the future, right? So you have to make those adjustments as you're doing this. You will see and understand the cash value according to, in relationship to your premium payments and your loan repayments, right? And if you've overextended yourself, they'd go crazy and reduce the outstanding loan. That's just velocity. You're going to pay less interest as soon as you make a loan repayment. That value becomes available for the next loan. And then maybe you do a combination of that and you partially collateralize the larger purchase later with a third party lender. And then, so you're doing what you want to do, what you see is right for you to do, and then you get rid of the third party lenders as soon as you possibly can, right? And then you avoid them altogether when you possibly can. And look, it takes time. You know, don't get caught in the idea that I should pay a high enough premium in year one or year two and then pay little next to nothing or small premiums after that. No, just so you can take advantage of that larger purchase today. No, go pay an appropriate premium and an appropriately structured policy for you and your family. And the cash value is the cash value. And then use that to do what you were going to do. And now you're like anyone else. I mean, heck, I want everything I want yesterday, right? I'm impatient. If I want it today. Well, you know, good things take time. So, and I've missed lots of real estate deals, but not just because I didn't have the capital, just because my mind wasn't right. You know, the deal wasn't right or whatever. Hindsight's always 20/20. It was either a good deal or it wasn't, you know. And then two, I've also avoided bad deals, right? Because I didn't have the ability to capitalize on them. And, you know, hindsight being 20/20, a lot of those deals, you know, thank God Almighty I didn't. So my encouragement is, you know, to know, understand your timeline. If you've got that goal out there, don't do anything that jeopardizes you from achieving that goal. So if you forego these, in my example, these smaller loans until you get to there, by all means, perfect. You know, I'd rather pay the third party money, the third party lender money in the form of interest and payments that I'll never return to me, if that is going to get me to my ultimate goal closer, right? And I'm always going to revert to the banker can do whatever they want. But you understand your cash flows, you understand your policies, and you understand your timeline. And then if you set your hand to the plow, go get it done. This is number three. Is the PDF, the premium deposit fund, a legitimate location for your extra interest, quote unquote, given that your policy or policies are full at the moment and that your PUA, paid up addition space, will open back up in the next couple of months? I would say no. I mean, this is 2024. Could it be a premium deposit fund? Yes, but the premium deposit fund on each company and each policy have different rules. You need to be aware of them. The banks where I'm at today, and I'm sure where you're at today, the local banks and credit unions, I mean, they're paying 4 to 4.5, 4.25% in interest, and the money's liquid. I'd rather have the money there in ready to go in a couple of months whenever I can pay a premium. As to put it into a PDF fund, they do earn interest. You know, the typical interest is around 3% or higher. Is it an okay place to put money? Yes. But the brick and mortar bank, whom I'm not dependent upon, right? They have a drive-through window and they pay good interest currently. Then again, the amounts are not really disclosed here. So that's general. So the short answer, the PDF fund could be a place to put the extra interest. Yes, but it should be a large amount of interest if it's extra interest. And sometimes, you know, I'm talking about you might earn 3 or 3.5% in the PDF fund. You might earn 4, 4.5% in the money market fund or checking account that you can write a certain amount of checks on at the local third-party lender. Cash is okay, too. I get it. Cash is trash and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a value to cash. Yes, the value, the purchasing power of the dollar is going down every day as we speak. No question. It's going to be reduced in the length of this podcast, right? No question. But there's still a value to cash. You know, if somebody walks up to me and says, hey, James, I got 3 gold coins and they happen to be something that I'm interested in or whatever. Could be a tractor, could be a horse, could be a whatever it is, a car, a goat, whatever. You know, it could be whatever it is. You know, when I have cash in my hand, that's a value. I can take advantage of that opportunity right now, and I don't have to get a policy loan. Wait, I don't have to drive to the bank, make a withdrawal. You know, so there's a value to cash. So how much interest are we talking about? What is the time period before you can pay the next, you know, premium payment? You said in a couple of months. I'm not going to sweat over a couple of months personally. So I hope that answers your question, James. Number four. If you are more or less saving as much as you can into your system at the moment, would it be legitimate in your eyes to fully fund your PDF to the max before you start a new policy? In this way, you're buying yourself some wiggle room given you starting a new policy from a stretched position. That could go either way. So if I put money into the PDF fund, I'm going to abide by the rules of that premium deposit fund. Am I going to do that instead of buying another policy and I'm stretching myself? My answer is me personally, no. I'd go buy the policy and I'd make sure that I wasn't overly stretched, right? But if you decide to put it in the premium deposit fund until you didn't, that's fair too. Right. I've practiced infinite banking for about 20 years now. We have a ton of policies. And so, you know, in my young age, I've got nothing for sale. You know, I'm a buyer. Right. So I can't wait to buy my next policies. I got money on the sidelines ready to go for the next premium as soon as I make it through underwriting. And I don't know that I have a single dollar in a PDF fund. All right. Pretty confident about that. I'm confident that I don't know, but I'm pretty confident that I don't have a single dollar in a PDF fund. I know where the premiums are coming from and they're all a stretch, right? And so I have money, cash on the sidelines, income flowing in and, you know, expenses flowing out. And I've got access to a reasonable amount of cash value. So I can go buy another policy. Is it financed if I borrow on a policy? Yes, it would be premium finance. That would be an underwriting question. You know, if I'm buying another policy, where's premium coming from? Is this being financed? Technically, actually, it is. Under the NAIC, National Association of Insurance Commissioner rules, if I borrow against this policy, in talking with the same company, right? Because they can see all that. I borrow against this policy today, 30 days, 60 days, up to 90 days later, I purchase a new policy with that same company. That new policy is a premium finance policy, regardless if I used the loan proceeds from that first policy to purchase the second policy, right? So that may be more information than you want to know. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm a buyer, and I think you should stretch yourself. Don't overly stretch yourself to the breaking point. No question. If you can't do it, don't do it, right? But you should know the minimums and the maximums, the contractual rights and the contractual obligations that you have on your next policy purchase. All right. And so, yes, be conservative, be cautious, but think through it and take action, right? There's no guarantee that you'll be insurable in 2 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years from now. None. Zero. All right. So today, if you've made the decision that you're going to buy that policy, check, double check, do whatever you do to make sure that whatever decision you're making is good and you can live with it, good, bad, or indifferent, then go do it. Okay. And I mean that in an encouraging way.
Thank you for listening. If you have a question that you would like answered, email me at james@bankingwithlife.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.